I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 8, Episode 4, titled The Last of the Starks. We're doing the spoiler cast today, so it's all about the books. Aaron, what do we got?
Is it all about the books now, Jim?
Yeah. You know,
I have a mind to turn this into a therapy session, because I feel like there's a lot of people breathing into a lot of paper bags. And hyperventilating, we're going to talk about that. But I thought we could talk about some other stuff.
Okay.
First off, I want to give out a general warning that it's my understanding there are a lot of leaks out there from the next two episodes. There is a lot of people, I think, full disclosure, we're not going to discuss any of that stuff on the podcast. I also have not seen these leaks because Cecily has been going through and pre-screening my feedback and removing anything that, because she's delved in and swam in the river of spoiler filth, so she's suffered for our spoiler sins, so she's acting as my filter for that. But it's my understanding from her and talking to some other people in the Game of Thrones community and just like being, you know, seeing people talk about it, that there is a lot of stuff that seems like they're credible. I think people thought that they were just being made up, but then I guess a lot of the leaks for this last episode, Last of the Starks, turned out to be like right on. Like people were talking about Rhaegal getting shot down. People were talking about Dany, Missandei being killed, turning Dany into, you know, or pushing Dany towards the Mad Queen path. So it seems like these leaks are not credible, and people need to be on your toes out there. I think there's a lot of communities that do a very good job of keeping this stuff lid clamped down, like the r/ASIOAF and r/Game of Thrones. But even then, I try to stay on threads that have been around for at least an hour. I tried to set, I forget to set, there's like a top comment where it will only show you the most top rated comments. Because like the best setting is a blended of like recency and also top voted. And sometimes that can burn you and you'll see a spoiler. So like just be real careful. And if you're super, super paranoid, unfortunately, you're going to have to stick to podcasts like that do a really good job of sanitizing spoilers themselves. So I think we're one of those.
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, there's a lot of leaks out there. Jimmy G actually had an interesting take on leaks that I wanted to read. Not just leaks, but also like the Starbucks coffee cup. She says, "I work for a big entertainment company, and I know firsthand how paranoid the business is about leaks. As a result, some of our most important announcements are made with very few people having any visibility to the materials being generated, even those who have had considerable expertise that could offer to improve these materials. Ultimately, an unfeasibly small group of people end up having total control over the final product, for better or worse. I'm sure that the paranoia around the final product, I'm sure that the paranoia around a huge property like Game of Thrones would be 100 times more intense. There'd be huge and complex disclosure processes, meaning that this final season, maybe they couldn't even just rope in extra historical consultants or have focus groups ensure that they weren't fucking up canon. Like the Gendry Rivers thing, or have the same team size reviewing all the footage for Starbucks-related anachronisms. We know from the show itself that rulers need to have a strong team of advisors to do well, but maybe the Double Ds were too paranoid to let anyone get close enough to vet their ideas." She says, "I heard on the Entertainment Weekly podcast, I think that's the EW podcast, that they decided to rebuild the existing Dubrovnik King's Landing set somewhere in Ireland so they'd have completely closed set. This is totally unheard of in the film industry. As a result, we also end up with King's Landing that looks like it's in the middle of the desert rather than the verdant hillsides of previous seasons. Have you seen any of this discussion?
Yeah, I've seen some of the screenshots. I've also seen a screenshot from like season 7, which looks pretty barren as well.
Yeah. I actually chose not to talk about this because people sent in screenshots of like, look on the map, they've changed it. Like, it's King's Landing is now further back from the sea and all that. And I mean, I think if everything else wasn't going wrong, I don't think people would care, because there's an easy explanation. Number one, we've never seen the side of King's Landing before. And number two, if Cersei's like gone for broke building giant crossbows, maybe it'd be an interesting plot progression to kind of like scouring of the Shire, King's Landing. Like, she's clear cut all the King's Woods around just so she can build these anti-siege machines.
Yeah.
I think that'd be cool, but like, people don't want to go that, like, people don't want to insert fan logic for the service of shit that they don't believe in. So sure. Instead, people are just complaining about it. Considering how many accurate leaks we've already been seeing, Gemma continues, I have to wonder whether it's been worth it. That's a great question. I've kind of changed my mind on the coffee cup thing, because I've listened to several entertainment podcasts that are not even about Game of Thrones. Like, just people that are in the industry, and they just couldn't fucking believe it. Like, they're like saying, like, one person was really persuasive. I thought it's like, this is like an Emilia Clarke sightline. Like, mm-hmm. How in the world did no one, you know, it's not like this was like in the corner of the scene. Like, she's looking right over this coffee cup in front of her to deliver this thing. Like, you know, how weren't there people like, I don't know. And they have since digitally painted it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So it does seem like maybe some of this paranoia leaks is shooting them in the foot. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm still inclined to just let them have their production error, frankly. Mm-hmm. You know, it may even be a case where, oh, on set they noticed it. Mm-hmm. They didn't scrap the footage. It got to the editor, and the editor didn't notice it, right?
Like, right.
And just saw, hey, this is a really good shot. I need to cut this in here. And the people working in the editing room didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so fucking easy for the internet, right? Like,
yeah,
the internet, if you make the tiniest error, the internet is going to catch it, because there are billions of people out there looking at these things.
Right.
So, I don't know. It kind of annoyed me when someone, I can't remember if it was on our forums or if it was on Reddit or what, but they said, oh, the internet spots this in a day, and the people who are paid to do this for their fucking jobs can't catch this? What the hell? I'm like, dude, it's because it's one person. It's because it's a group of five people.
Sure.
It's not 100 million people all looking at this thing, scrutinizing every detail. Like, there's just a scale thing involved here. You're going to find these problems.
To your point also, like, I will say that after hearing your comments when I filtered that through the podcast I listened to, there is some like palpable envy. With these insiders, they're like, look at this show that had almost 2 years to write 6 episodes with $50 million, and they can't even catch, like, there might be a little bit of, like, piling on, because it's like the rich, popular kid that walks in with this $1,000 prom suit and his flies out and his dick's hanging out. You know, it's like, oh, you know, all you had to do is zip up your phone. That's maybe a bad example, because I think we can reasonably expect people not to have their dicks flopped out, regardless of their class and breeding, but...
Most of the time, I get mine in my pants. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's been probably since 3 years old that I've accidentally exposed myself. So most people grow out of that.
At the same time, I understand like why people would get angry about that, because they, you know, some of them love this show, and they don't want to see production errors. Right?
Yeah,
obviously,
you know, like if everybody was on board with this being an A++, like, two-thirds of the way, it's like, man, it's great, and I can't even imagine it getting any better. The coffee cup would be a funny thing. It'd be a funny meme. It would be, like, a good-natured ribbing. Mm-hmm. But because, I think the preponderance of the fandom is seeing this as like, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, what are we getting ourselves into? It's just like, you know, you see some takes like that. Tanya asks us to remember, do you remember what happened when Game of Thrones did an episode airing on Father's Day? Do you remember?
No.
They killed Tywin Lannister, his own son, on Father's Day.
Yeah.
This Sunday is Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. Should we be worried for the Mother of Dragons and the Mother of all evil queens and Jaime's children?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, you should be worried for everyone.
It seems likely one of those will die.
Mm-hmm.
in this episode.
I mean, unless they're going to save it to the very last episode, then
right.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But yeah, so it's like, I think it's better than, it probably is better than 50% chances that it's going to be a Black Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wanted to talk about, because like, you know, to your point about how people are reacting and like people are drawing up camps, like I just saw that the Song of Ice and Fire subreddit split into an anti-hater subreddit, and they only allow praise for the show. Like, I'm starting to see some divisions in the ranks. I thought we could talk about the psychology of fandom and final seasons and how we feel about it. And I'm going to volunteer and share some experiences I've had with series over the years. I don't know if people find this interesting or not, but I'm just trying to think about this, like take a step back and think about this holistically. So one of the first times I can remember being let down by a show that I loved when I was as a teenager and Star Trek The Next Generation wrapped up.
Okay.
I was so fucking pissed by the finale because, I mean, overall, the show was going to be over. And a lot of that was just me coming to grips with the fact that, like, oh, there's going to be, I'm not going to see Picard and Riker and Data and Crusher and everybody gallivanting in the stars. But also, you know, it involves jumping through a bunch of time, and like old man Picard has like was struggling with dementia, and he had his ex-wife Beverly Crusher, so he'd gone through a divorce, and as a 14 or 15 year old, like I just recently lost my grandfather to Alzheimer's, my mom and dad are fighting all the time, I was thinking they're getting a divorce, I was bringing a lot of my own personal baggage and seeing this, like, these, like, I think it sucks that Picard is suffering these things that I've suffered through, and this is like kind of my escape, and I don't like this. And then, like, also fucking Q again. Oh, my God. What the hell? How many times, like, you know, it's like, and, like, it's a bunch of time travel bullshit. And when I went to talk to my friends, like, in the lunchroom about it, and they were all kind of hyped about it, I was even more pissed because it's not fun being alone in, like, dissatisfaction and happiness amongst your community, right? It feels bad and alienating.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I've grown up and the years gone by, I actually think it's one of the better finales of a show that I've loved. Like, all those things that I hate about it are actually human things, and it makes it gives experience like a, you know, more richer, you get a more richer experience when you see your heroes suffer like that. So now I think that All Good Things, the finale of the Next Generation, is like one of the best things I've ever seen. Contrast that with season 7 of True Blood.
Oh, God.
I'm picking my examples for either non-controversial or people don't care about it, just so we can take some emotional steps back from our thoughts about this. You know, True Blood, I'm never going to say it's like on Game of Thrones level, but it was a lot of trashy fun in the early seasons, and then it kind of coasted on camp and ridiculousness. But, like, this was Cecily and I's first season we ever covered on television together, and I actually went and listened to, like, the first 15 minutes of our finale podcast, and we just were so fucking bummed about it. And I remember there were so many popular theories about what would happen and who would pair up and who would live and who died. And the finale managed to do none of those things and yet piss everyone off. Like, it's like, not only were these ideas not our ideas, but they were legitimately bad ideas. But there was also still, I noticed on the True Blood forums and in our fan feedback and all that, there were still passionate defenders of the show. Minority. Because, crucially, it sucks to be lonely in your joy. Like, how many times you see in, like, TV and film, like, a person has triumphed, but they've lost their friends in the process, and now they're rich and famous, and they're feasting and partying.
The Pyrrhic victory, sure.
But they're just surrounded by a bunch of assholes they don't like anymore. And I feel like maybe on both sides of fandom we can realize that it sucks to be left behind when everyone else is enjoying something. It sucks to be left behind when everybody else is hating something, and you're the only, like, I just wanted to let people know that I kind of get all that.
That's why I look at what the general fan population is doing, and I just adopt their opinion. That's all I do. I have opinions of my own. Yeah, I just go out there.
You synthesize, triangulate, and adopt. That's a good strategy.
Yeah, it's worked for me so far.
But I mean, like, it's like, I don't feel like we're a hater podcast because, like,
I actually took a little bit of shit for liking this episode. I think.
Did you really?
Yeah.
For
liking most of it.
I think that, you know, when I think about all the different shows we've covered over the years and, like, all the ones that have come to a conclusion, like, some of them just ended so beautifully, like The Leftovers, Breaking Bad. Some of them were ambiguous but poignant, and like they really capped off, like maybe it's not the most happy ending, but it capped off the series well. Like I'm thinking Mad Men. Some, like I remember like the last season of Justified, like there was a lot of writing problems, but like they went for broke on making the fans feel rewarded. Like you got to the end of the last season of Leftovers and like, holy shit, this was a love letter written for me. And I think it's like, it's still too early to tell, like, what, you know, what Game of Thrones is going to be thought of, like, in the minds of the fans, like, a month from now or a year from now or a decade from now. But, like I said, just before, like, we get to the very end, I just want everyone to, like, you know, look across the divide at your fellow fans and kind of have empathy for them. And, you know, like, I'm not trying to talk anybody out of loving Game of Thrones. I wish I was in that category. I mean, holy shit. Just from a business standpoint, I would be rooting for Game of Thrones to be successful so that we can continue this head of steam into the prequels. I wrote two books on the off-season, godsofthrones.com. Their tail would be longer and fatter if everybody decides that Game of Thrones ended really well, or if George got his act together and wrote the books, you know? Like, I want this show to succeed. I see no upside to hating on the show and thinking, like, oh, it's a piece of shit, it's going to fail. So, I just, you know, that's my feelings on it. So, do you want to share? I feel like we're in a Game of Thrones anonymous, and I'm Aaron, and I just shared my story.
I don't know. Maybe I'm in a minority here. I know I'm in a minority, but I don't think they've been doing such an awful job. I think they made a couple of mistakes, but they made a couple of mistakes in season 7. And when I rewatched that, I was like, oh, this is actually a really good season, except for these couple of small things, which don't bother me anymore. I think everybody's just a little too close to it at the moment.
Yeah, there's also, like, I saw some people like, you know, people were mad when they killed Ned, and they're mad when they killed Rob and all that stuff. The crucial difference between those examples and now is, like, we're at the end. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, you can...
It's amplified.
Yeah, you want people to be upset by decisions you make in the early goings. You want people to get invested emotionally and all that kind of stuff.
I was going to say, I think it's amplified because we're at the end. Like, people, you know, they want what they want, and when it doesn't turn out exactly like they want or they were hoping, then... The pressure is just so high because we know there's not anything left to then correct course to, right?
Yeah.
You can't say, oh, well, you know, they'll get it right next season.
Right.
I can come back for this.
They killed Ned, but Rob's going to kick their ass in. Well, they killed Rob, but John and Danny's going to kick their ass in.
No,
well,
this is where we're going to leave the story. And I think people, that just amplifies people's emotions on it. And if they get disappointed, they get really disappointed.
Yeah. Do you feel lonely in your joy, Jim?
A little bit.
In this room?
Yeah. Totally.
I feel lonely in my discontent. Hug me. Love me. All right. Enough of this bullshit feelings talk. Let's move into more feedback. I want to take a break to tell you guys about the club, club.baldmove.com. Now, I'm sure you know that we have 3 podcasts each week, every week about Game of Thrones. But did you know that after the Instant Talk pod or the Instant Take podcast, we do a whole after show where we spend some time talking to the fans on the YouTube chat feature? They can... make observations, ask questions, do some witty joke, some light comedy, tight five, whatever you want. And it's all exclusive to club members. You have to be a club member to get access to the link to participate in it. And it's a great way to like decompress after Game of Thrones. It's a lot of fun to hang out with your fellow fans. You can get the access to this Instant Talk feature as well as a bunch more opportunities for expanded content, ad-free feeds, etc. at club.baldmove.com. Hey, before we get back to the feedback, I want to talk about some things happening here at Bald Move. Cecily whipped up a design called I Declare Hashtag Fan Bankruptcy and put it in our merch store. You can get it on t-shirts right now, merch.baldmove.com. If you just want to throw your hands up and declare fan bankruptcy with the rest of us, it is there for you to do so. We have our Wednesday Super Serious Film Fest. Fantasy continues to roll on. This week we had Dragonheart. Next week we have Excalibur. Don't forget, it's a podcast. There's an enhanced video version of the podcast on youtube.com/baldmove, and as well as a live watch. And you can find the podcast in the Bald Movies feed on your favorite podcast aggregator. Godsofthrones.com continues to be available, both volumes 1 and 2. Godsofthrones.com. It's a book that I wrote in the off season, exploring the cultures and religions and just the characters. Like, I feel like it's a little bit overblown saying it's a bunch of culture and religion, because it's, you know, I did co-write the book. It's also funny. I flatter to think it's informative. It's very well reviewed on Amazon. Check it out on godsofthrones.com. Pin-Y.com. We're out of the house snow pins, but there's still Weirwood the Starewood, the brand's face on a weirwood tree. If you like enamel pins, if you think they look good on your jacket, you think it look good on your lapel, your backpack, these are very attractive, high-quality pins at pin-y.com. All these links, of course, in the show notes. Tonight, we're seeing Detective Pikachu with our wives/girlfriends and trying to keep them apart from each other. We'll have a review of that on the Bald Movies feed as well. And then tomorrow we come back on Friday for Bald Move Television. We're going to do a little potpourri edition talking about the new State of the Union micro comedy that's on Sundance, as well as Cecily and I just finished all two seasons of Hulu's Harlots. We got a lot to say about that. We might be covering in real time season 3 when it debuts this July. Check it out on Bald Move TV.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on. It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Chloe B., I was just reading an article about the Game of Thrones spinoff series that's in development. As has been previously reported, it noted that the prequel series will chronicle the world's descent from the Golden Age of Heroes into its darkest hour. This got me thinking, could this be where we get our answers about the origins of the Night King and fill in all the missing information we were hoping to get about the White Walkers? As you've already discussed, many fans were left disappointed after the Night King was abruptly killed off in the Long Night before his true motives and lore could be really laid out. Could it be the HBO are trying to keep the mystery going so they have more material for the new series?
It could be, actually, yeah.
I think... So, like, if... My thought is it would be very cool if the Long Night series people, and I know it's just, like, that's not the real name. It's just, like, the working title. Or unless it's actually been declared the real name, and I wasn't paying attention. But I think it would be a very cool goal for them to... try, like, that would be a nice challenge for the writing room to be like, we are going to, if we touch on the Night King at all, we are going to try to add some shading and some dimension so that you don't, like, when you go back for the rewatch in Game of Thrones, like, you know all this stuff, so everything is just cooler. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we're going to give him more depth, and you sometimes see that, like, in the more successful prequels they try to do that thing, but sometimes it backfires too. Like, we frequently remarked on, like, the Better Call Saul podcast that maybe knowing so much about Gus Fring is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he was, like, part of what made him tick in the original Breaking Bad is, like, just knowing enough of his shady background to give him interest and texture and, like, you know, make him mysterious and cool. And then, like, knowing that, you know, what his underwear size is and the fact that he's got a third nipple. And I'm trying to make up non-spoiler spoilers that nobody wants to know that about Gus Fring. Yeah. So, I'm hoping that they do. Like, I don't think that, like, I think they should tell their own story and they should go for broke making it as cool and interesting and standalone as possible. But yeah, if they could make the Night King three-dimensional, that'd be cool. Mm-hmm. Without having to me buy 3D glasses, because I'm just not going to wear 3D glasses in my living room.
No.
It's not going to happen. Daniel M., on Tuesday's episode, you agreed with Varys' view that Jon's claim to the throne is more politically viable than Dany's. You argued that, one, Jon's greater legitimacy, and two, the idea that people like him more make his claim stronger. But you are assuming that the realm will buy the claim that Jon is Rhaegar's legitimate son at face value. Just imagine tomorrow someone emerged to claim, actually, I'm the legitimate heir to the United Kingdom. Sorry, Prince Charles, move aside. That would be fucking amazing.
It would be awesome.
That would be...
Can you imagine that plus Brexit?
Yes. Can we get a bastard child of one of, like, the queen to step forward and claim the legitimate, like, monarchy of, like, oh my God. Oh my God. Who needs Game of Thrones?
Oh, the timing's so good.
Can they sword fight? Can we get a sword fight at Buckingham Palace? You have yourselves repeatedly made the point that legitimacy is real only insofar as you have real raw political power to enforce it. Indeed, if you look at history, countless usurpers with no legitimacy at all have falsely claimed to be descended from royalty, and no one questioned their dubious claims. Precisely because they had real power. As for the second point, John may inspire loyalty from Northerners, but the simple fact is that he does not have the real power to take the throne outright. Dany does. There's no indication that a northern bastard who is now calling himself a legitimate Targaryen will inspire more loyalty from southerners than a magical dragon queen everyone agrees is legitimate Targaryen. I mean, I think you are mostly right. But the thing is why does Dany have the power? Because it's the dragon, right? That's the only thing she's got over Jon at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And if all of her advisors and people turned against her, like, we've seen these dragons are super vulnerable. Like, I think it would be very easy to disarm Dany at this point, especially now that she's down to one dragon.
Yeah.
So, and maybe that's one of the reasons that the writers were really keen to pair off Dany's dragons in sometimes, you know, unbelievable or what seemingly meaningless ways, because they want, you know, if Dany had all three of her dragons and John, they were talking about John having a better claim, like, that would be kind of ridiculous. You know, it's like one side having nukes and the other side doesn't, and the other wants to try to take their throne away. It's like, it's not going to work. So I don't know. I just think that's the whole thing. Is the other thing is, as far as people believing it, is like, this wouldn't come down necessarily to just Bran's word and Sam's word versus Dany's word, right? Like, Sam has some evidence that could be collected from the Citadel.
Right. I mean, the Maesters would have to agree with him
now
at some point.
What would be fascinating is what would the Maesters decide to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the thing.
Do they take a side, or do they remain neutral and simply, here's the information?
Right. And there's examples in the canon of Maesters being kingmakers. There's examples in the canon of the Faith of the Seven kind of throwing their weight around. Like, it's not all just like, you know, it's not all just about claims and inheritances and who's got the bigger army. Sometimes, like, these cultural forces kind of can hold sway too. But like I said, it's complicated. How complicated is going to get in the next two episodes? I don't know. It seems like it's going to be a basic. You know, it looks like they're setting up Dany to do something truly awful next episode, and then John has to deal with it. And what's he going to do? What play is he going to make? Is, you know, this is like Anakin landing, or this is Obi-Wan landing on Mustafar, and Anakin standing there over a dying Padme. You know, what have you done? You were supposed to be my brother, my niece, my nephew. Wait, my aunt. Like, it's that kind of situation. So. Adam A, you've talked about who Varys could conspire with that needs no introduction, and I was thinking, why not Jack and Hagar? I realize Braavos is across a narrow sea, but there's been plenty of time jumps and fast traveling this. Oh yeah, yeah, you don't have to justify logistics or travel time.
Yeah.
Varys says he will do whatever it takes for the sake of the realm, no matter the personal cost. Maybe he'd be willing to pay whatever price, perhaps even his own life in exchange for Dany's. Like you both said, there are only two episodes left, and it might be a hasty plot, but maybe Varys has had this as a backup plan in case, just in case, and ready to spring into action. What do you think about... Because, like, I'm not sure if Adam is literally saying Jack and Hagar or suggesting that Varys would hire a faceless man.
You've already taken his root and stem, and now you want to take his face? Leave the man alone. Leave the man alone.
There actually, I think, is...
What price could he pay?
His own life.
His own life?
Because, like, the faceless men charge... charge, like, a sliding scale based on how what you can afford. And, you know, I don't know what Varys could give up.
The realm.
The realm? Is the faceless man running the realm?
I don't know what that means, but what does he love the most? The realm, according to him.
What is most dear to him?
Yeah, it's the realm. It's the people.
Show Ferris.
But I don't know how you give up the realm and also appoint a king for the realm at the same time.
I think that they're like, I don't know that he could, like, maybe get his hands on a lot of money. Maybe he could, like I said, sacrifice his own. Like, I think that there is an example of a person committing suicide or, like, giving up their own life to pay for a debt for faceless men. It's usually more of a pauper. Mm. Like, you know, a father who's pissed off that his daughter got killed or something. You know, it's not usually a person of means, but is Varys a person of means at this point?
I don't think so.
I think it's King's Landing Day. He could get a hold of a couple 10,000 gold dragons to slide around. But like in Danny's camp, I don't think her checkbook's that big.
I don't think he's had anything but what's been in his pocket and what people are willing to give him for a very long time.
Since he went over with the Tyrion in a crate.
For sure.
Yeah. Adam continues, the other bigger character that was left behind and not addressed is Dario Naharis. Any chance he could play a role in the final battle? Either with the Second Sons or if he somehow sold his sword to the Golden Company. When I was thinking about this, I kept going back and forth about whether that would be satisfying. Like, yeah. Dario Naharis, like, essentially playing the same scam and, like, stealing the whole Golden Company or backstabbing to get in. Like, would that feel good? Like, Danny is facing off. So Dario fighting against her, I don't think that makes sense at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they have told no part of the story that would make him, unless you're just generic, well, he's a Spurn lover, and he heard about Jon Snow, and he...
I just don't think Dario cares that much. I think Dario would just be on to the next one, honestly.
And if he does, like, if he does care, I think it's more of like the genuine kind of love and admiration kind of thing that would not, like, the non kind of insanely jealous kind of love.
Yeah.
Because Dario, like, there's other fish in the sea, but him being like a trickster kind of thing, I don't know if that would feel satisfying. Because presumably it would happen early enough so Dany wouldn't have to burn King's Landing, and then we're back to, like, potential happy ever-after ending back on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was always very resistant to, like, this pure sugary-type endings. I wasn't expecting an ending perhaps as bleak as what it's looking like we're going to get, but, like, I don't know, that feels a little bit not as middle of the road as I was expecting.
Yeah, I just don't really see Dario coming back. I think there are other people who could be brought back that, you know, we talked about maybe Yara with the armies of,
right,
of the Dornish, I think would make maybe a little more sense than Dario, because he's been out of the picture for so long. I just don't see it.
I know a lot of people a couple weeks ago were speculating Howland Reed might finally make an appearance, like at the, like, as the last minute savior at the Battle of Winterfell. And I mean, there's still a chance because, you know, Jon's marching through his neighborhood on the way to King's Landing. Like, there is an outside chance that you would meet Howland and Mira Reed in the Neck. But at this point, like, why would he have sat out the Battle of Winterfell? Why would he now be joining them on the way to defeat Cersei? I guess it's a personal grudge. He loved Ned. He hates the Lannisters because they killed his boy. Catherine B., I'm having a hard time with the characterization of Dany this season as Mad Queenie. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it feels to me very gendered. She'd like to use as an example the show's treatment of Stannis. For the most part, we all like Stannis. I mean, up until he burns his daughter alive, but, you know, before that, Stannis de Manis. Stannis is prepared to sack the city to win the throne. He is ambitious and ruthless and will do what he has to do to fulfill his destiny and claim his rightful place as ruler. He murders his brother, in the books murders other people with shadow babies and blood magic, and then is prepared to sack the city if they tell them Stannis the hundreds will die, and he responds, thousands. And all of us are like, hot damn, yeah, Stannis, let's go. No one says Stannis is a mad king. They describe him as rigid, as unbending, as a rightful heir willing to do anything to take his crown to his detriment. This plotline feels forced, and it's really kind of a bummer. I'm the last guy to talk you out of feeling like criticism about powerful women is gendered, because holy shit, a lot of times it is. You know, a guy is just fucking passionate and telling it how it is, and using rough language of men of action, and women are shrill. And that's if they're trying to be polite, because if they're not trying to be polite, then they're just fucking bitches. But I don't agree with the characterization of Stannis as sacking King's Landing. To me, sacking implies like what went on in like the Robert Baratheon rebellion, where the entire city's pillaged, and I think that's what people were worried what was going to happen. But like, I think that from Stannis' own POV, and from what I remember the novels, that like Stannis is probably the one you'd most want to sack your city, because he's not going to let his men run and rape and pillage. He'll fucking execute them all, and they all kind of know it. So when he's talking about hundreds dying versus thousands, he's talking about his own men, his soldiers that he's commanding to win this military objective, which, I mean, you can start if you want to start deciding whether fights are worth fighting and whether human lives are worth being spent at all, I mean, that's fine and philosophical, but he's a military commander trying to get a military objective, and he's not targeting civilians. He's not like exploding caches of wildfire. He's trying to take over the and dethrone the government of King's Landing. Do you agree with that analysis? Or
yeah, I do, but I also think you know, he did kill his brother. That's something you can't overlook. It's like Danny, you know, burning the Tarleys.
He's a political rival.
Yeah, it's like Danny burning the Tarleys. I mean, it's you can't just excuse it and say, oh, well, it's a politics thing, so yeah. No harm, no foul. Like,
yeah,
he burns his brother. That's roughly equivalent to the, you know, Danny burning the Tarleys. I think the thing that sets Danny apart to me is sort of the same thing she claims about her right to the throne is it's her destiny. It's in some ways potentially her destiny to become another mad Targaryen, right?
Like, it's one of them. Yeah, you could.
It certainly runs in the family. Right. So like every time you think of her last name, you also have to think of the things that have happened within her family. The last king that they had,
sure. Her father
before Robert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't separate her from that. It's just not possible in my mind. So I think that's the biggest difference, but I also think you're right. Mm-hmm. I think especially, you know, in fandoms on the internet, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people really don't want to see Dany on the throne simply because she's a woman.
Yeah.
I think that absolutely exists.
I do think also, like, just getting back to the Stannis point, that, like, I do feel like the fans, majority of fans turned against Stannis when he burned his daughter.
Oh, yeah. Me, 100% I did.
And even the ones that didn't were, like, not because they were justified. It was more like, well, Book Stannis isn't going to do that. There's no fucking way Book Stannis burns his daughter, blah, blah,
Book,
you know.
Stannis.
Like, maybe Selyse will burn her daughter, but not Book Stannis.
Book, like, Stannis is dead, along with all the other book characters. They no longer exist.
Right. They're Schrodinger's characters right now. Until we open the Winds of Winter, we're not sure if they're alive or dead. But yeah, no, I think that, like, you are right, Jim's right. There's definitely an element of people that do, you know, just don't want to see Dany on the Iron Throne for illegitimate reasons. But the show's, and I think the other thing is, because I've been thinking a lot about this too, is, like, I think that, but I can't defend this. I don't know why I feel this way. I feel like I would have a better... I feel like I'd be rolling with the Dany turning into a Mad Queen punch if I felt like it's, in hindsight, inevitable. Like, there was this like... I think it's a great reveal when Frodo's at the crack of Mount Doom. Maybe I said this last week, but he's about, like, you know, Sam's with tears in his eyes, like, come on, do it, end this, throw it. And Frodo turns around and says no, and he's going to take the ring for his. Like, that is... It's tragic, but it feels inevitable in the moment. And then J.R.R. Tolkien had the brilliant thing to then subvert that with, like, you know, essentially a more tortured version of Frodo fighting himself for supremacy of the ring and then kind of mercy killing himself. Like, that's a fucking hell of a turn, but it all kind of checks out. And I don't know why, because people point out, like, well, look at when Dany did this, and look at when Dany did this, and look when the person said this, and when the gods make a Targaryen, they flip a coin, and there's not inevitability to this outcome. Is it just that I don't like it? Is that why I'm just having this visceral reaction?
I mean, I can't say exactly why you're having the reaction you are, but yeah, I think those elements are there. Like, I look at it, and I think the core thing that I like about it,
yeah,
is that Dany has an ongoing choice to make, right? Like, she doesn't just make the choice to not be the Mad Queen once.
Right.
She has to make it continuously, right?
Well, that feels like that's a total... I'll keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the idea that this might be fate, but that she's fighting against it, to me makes it very interesting, because we don't know whether it's fate or not. We don't know if her destiny is to become a Mad Queen or if her destiny is to... be the greatest ruler that Westeros has ever seen. We just don't know yet, and that's, to me, the exciting part.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I guess it feels to me a lot like, and I know I've made this comparison, but like Anakin Skywalker in the Star Wars prequels, where it's like he had to turn to Darth Vader, but instead of like telling that as like a slow, inevitable descent, it was more of like very swingy. Like, his mom dies by the way, a very contrived way, and he just goes psycho and kills him, and then the person, like, no one has natural reactions to him doing this, and I don't know. And I think back about like him, but I can't say that about any of this. I can't say that about any of the things that the show has had Danny done. And maybe it's more of like this stuff is tracking, but the other things like the way the Battle Winterfell went down and the way her dragons got shot out of the sky arbitrarily feels like maybe it's being maneuvered. Like the storytelling is fine and the concept's fine and like the them telling Danny's story, but some of the other stuff is clunky and I'm just kind of throwing it all together. Like honestly, no joke, guys. I spent a lot of time thinking about how I feel about the show. And I just like, cause like, yeah, like I feel like I'm full of shit, both ways. And it's an uncomfortable feeling, honestly. Shall we move on?
Sure.
Justin, what are the comparisons between Aerys II and Dany? I ask because I'm pissed off that Varys would plot with Illyrio from season one to put a Targaryen back on the throne and then withdraw support after Sunday's events. Let me run it back. Dany has freed Slaver's Bay. Yep. Crucified or torched many of its masters. Also, yep. She has given up her Dothraki horde and most of her Unsullied to keep Westeros alive. Then she hints that she'll burn innocents in King's Landing to take the Iron Throne, and now Varys is out. Missandei's Dracarys is a way to motivate Dany to trust her instincts rather than her counsel, and if it means immolating supporters that are hiding in the gates of King's Landing who are seeking shelter behind this fucked up woman who just blew up the Holy Sept to save herself, then fuck them, they should have left. I mean, what are the small folks supposed to do, though? Like, run out the front gates into Dany's arms? Could they even do that? Would they be allowed to?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I mean, once the gates close for siege warfare, nobody's getting in or out.
Like, these aren't Cersei supporters. They're hostages, you know? I've always thought the spider was the person I could trust the most, but he seems way off on this. He isn't taking into account everything Dany has done for the realm, which sets her apart from her father, and I think he's going to get him killed in this quote-unquote strange country. I totally agree with you on the latter part. Let's talk this through. The big difference between, I guess, Dany and the Mad King is that Varys has a better alternative. He sees Jon as just a full upgrade over Dany, like all of Dany's upside and none of her downside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the argument ends, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like Mad King, he didn't have a clear alternative. He did back the Bobby horse, but that turned out to be a drunken, slovenly, lazy horse to back. Mm-hmm. And then he started engineering in the books. He's depending on what his true motivations you believe. He started engineering the downfall of the Baratheon regime and also building up this Aegon Targaryen over in Essos, training him to be the perfect king and the perfect leader. And then as soon as he destabilizes the realm, he's just going to slide this person in and, you know, everything's hunky-dory. But, like, when he has a horse that he's backing and there's a better, stronger, nicer horse that he can just jump off in mid-saddle, like, I think that's what he does. That's what the spider would do.
Yeah, it seems like that's been his pattern. Now, he says that everything he's doing is for the realm, but this mm-hmm. sort of opportunistic attitude, mm-hmm. you know, I think has to throw some doubt in there.
But is it opportunistic for the realm or opportunistic
right.
for him?
Right? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he doing this because he can get a leg up? He can kind of hop to the next horse that isn't about to careen over a cliff?
Yeah.
Or is he doing it simply because he does want to support the realm and give them the best ruler? And I think that's still a little bit up in the air, though I come down on the Varys is a good guy side.
Varys think show Varys, I was like, book Varys is kind of up in the air, but show Varys, mm-hmm. like, I don't think you're going, like, no one's going to peel his mask off next episode and he's been evil all the time.
I don't think so.
Know? Like, yeah. I think he's like one of the more remarkably consistent characters. It's mm-hmm. he's always said it's for the realm. His fucking with Littlefinger, his supporting of Tyrion, like his trying to help Ned take the Black. Like everything he's been doing has been to engineer a precise, better transfer of power. I feel like that all tracks through. So I still like Varys. I do think he's going to get his ass executed in a treason plot.
It's pretty likely.
I think he's going to get Guy Fawkes'd next episode or episode. It's got to, like, oh, damn, there's just so much to do in these next two episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, that, if the treason carries forward and why the foreshadowing of it doesn't, then he has to be executed. Do you do that in the penultimate episode? Or
unless the treason is wholly effective.
Yeah.
But even then, like, John hears he committed treason. I don't think John lets him live.
I think you're right. Like if
You might be right. He's dead either way.
If Varys takes Dany off the board before she's able to sack King's Landing and burn it to a crisp, I don't think Jon ever forgives that, because he never would believe that she was on the cusp of doing that. Yeah, it's like, no, there's no way she would do that. I know her. I love her. There's, you know, even though she's my aunt and that's squicky to me now, like, there's no way. She might threaten and bluster, but she'll do the right thing. Now, if she gets overthrown after King's Landing gets sacked, like, okay, first of all, Varys, way to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory, and also then Jon buys it, but I don't know. It feels like King's Landing is going to get fucked.
You know, I don't want to say too much, but we are in the spoiler cast. Uh-huh. Miguel Sapochnik is directing next episode. He directed the last one. The gigantic battle.
They usually bring him out for the
action. He directed Hardhome, and
we know we're going to get some action in some form or another when Cersei butts heads with Dany.
Yeah, you can look at Dany's face at the end of this episode.
Right,
you know she's pissed. You know she's coming for King's Landing.
Yeah,
so get ready for it. Maybe this time you should buckle in to lose some of the beloved characters.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
I said that last time and I was completely wrong.
Well, if nobody's significance dies this episode, then I don't know. Like, it feels like they're setting up for like a really heartwarming end, because like they're like, well, we need these characters to be able to say they're like, you know, the end on a happy note. But it's weird that they're keeping so many people alive, but also seems like they're setting up a bummer of an ending, you know. Like, maybe that's the other thing. Like, maybe, honestly, like, I don't know what they've got in mind for all these characters, but maybe they should have killed off a few more in the Battle of Winterfell just so people can kind of get, like, those gut punches, and instead of having it hit all at once, they're like, okay, I'm on board for a more grim, like, holy shit, a version of this story. But I don't know. Like, could you kill... Like, the thing is, like, you know... But who would they kill? Because, like, the Hound's got something to do. Mm-hmm. You know, Brienne they could have killed, obviously, because, like, as much as I like that...
She's not really in danger, as far as I can tell, unless she goes after Jaime, but...
Right, but if she died, like, that would have been an interesting... That would have lit in a real fire out of Jaime to go get vengeance for Cersei.
Yeah.
You know, like, they did that anyway, but now it's like they kept Brienne alive to break her heart. That's kind of a bummer. Like, maybe she just dies valiantly on the battlefield. I don't know. I don't want a Monday morning quarterback the whole show, but...
Cersei sees that she's going down.
Mm-hmm.
She's got no defense, so she puts wildfire into the wells in King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
They take the city, they kill Cersei. Everybody drinks the water, and Sam has to tend to them as they shit themselves to death with dysentery.
That could happen. You know, it's also, what about this? What if, like... Because we know we have the caches of wildfire still left to go. What if...
Do we? I was wondering about that.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard...
Because she used some of them, or, you know, a significant portion of them.
Yeah. But, like, I think that, like, no one would not believe it if it turns out there are a few more caches, or if she's had the pirate... Hey, wildfire's really saved their ass a couple of times. Make some more pots of this, guys.
Yeah.
Would it be interesting if, like Dany comes up with, like, a cunning plot to surgically take out Cersei... And she uses, like, dragonfire or something, and that ignites the wildfire cache, and she inadvertently destroys
kills
the king
everybody.
Of the city?
Huh. I don't know, maybe, yeah.
That'd be a way to kind of, like, because then it's like, I feel like I have tried to help you people declare fan bankruptcy, and now I'm selling you penny stocks. So, but... It would be kind of awesome if Dany actually one last time fights off her worst impulses and, like, okay, we're going to do this right. It blows up to her face, kills some people, more people she loves, and ends up with the same outcome. And she's like, you know what? Fuck you. Dracarys. And, like, just starts, like, because then, like, that would actually, like, I'd be convinced, like, okay, that's an arc that would drive a person fucking insane.
Uh-huh.
Like, no matter how hard I try to be good and resist my worst impulses and temptations, you gotta fucking bring the demon out of me. So,
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Catronia H. I think the Double D's have ran out of, books, they've mined Gurm's other works, and where previously Dany's arc was closer to Aegon the First, she's looking more and more to end her story closer to Rhaenyra. Queen Rhaenyra didn't start out noticeably as a mad or even bad Targaryen. She was the realm's delight. But after being thwarted so many times and suffering so many losses, the madness overtook her and ended with her death, killed by a dragon. Rhaenyra lost her baby in childbirth, lost three of her other children to the war. One of her children was murdered in King's Landing to draw her out. And while she took the throne, she couldn't hold it. And she's making, you know, she's like, you know, that could be an analogy to like Miss Sandy. Indeed, it was a small folk who really turned against her and hastened the end of her short reign. She became paranoid of the loyalty of the man she loved and ordered his death and was inevitably betrayed by her own trusted advisors. You know, Catronia, your email got me thinking that, like, because you're looking at it from the other end, like, oh, I've ran out of George material, so I'm going to go to, like, Fire and Blood and read Targaryen history and kind of, like, brush the... What if Martin's doing that? Like, you know what? I don't really know how to end this, but I really like having rich historical parallels and, like, narrative, like, rhyming and echoing. So I'm going to just, like, go ham creatively on all this, like, 300 years worth of Targaryen, like, a simulation. And I'm just going to just like just not even give a shit if it makes sense. I'm just going to have a bunch of wars and things. And like then after I get this done, I can see what the fans like and don't like and what I like and don't like, what worked. And then I can start picking the stuff that does. And that what happens to Dany. And also I'm brilliant because it's all past as prologue and history repeating itself. Like that feels like a gardener solution to keep the publisher off his back, to keep making money and to like workshop his ideas.
Yeah.
Do you think he's actually doing it?
Man, if I knew what was going on in George Martin's head,
yeah,
like I might go insane. I might become a mad king.
You'd be more fun as a mad queen, honestly. I mean, you got the legs for it. Let's just say
maybe after I see Rocket Man.
There you go. You need some inspiration.
Yeah.
Aaron P., looking back on Season 8, Episode 4, there seems to be one glaring error that nobody mentions. How did Dany and remaining Unsullied get to King's Landing off of Dragonstone? Euron appeared to have completely destroyed their fleet and probably drowned a lot of remaining Unsullied. Unless swimming was part of their training, did she hire Salador San? Some other fleet showed up. There is a naval equivalent of showing someone encircled by enemies, but the next they are seen free and walking away with no explanation as to what happened.
Yeah, those dragons got a big old back.
They do.
Huge back.
They do.
How many horns they have to hang on to?
Enough.
You don't need to hang on to two horns. Dany just does. You can hang on to one.
Dany, when she rescued John and everybody, treated Drogon like a fucking minibus. Mm-hmm. Like, they had like eight people on the back of that thing. I think Drogon's a big boy. You can carry 12 at a time.
I was asking the same question, but I stopped asking because the thing is, they're not going to tell me. So
I feel like, and that's, I guess the other thing is, like, I feel like my experience with Game of Thrones in the last 4 years have been just like, you know what? Yes, jetpacking is annoying, but we're just going to ignore it because that's what this show does. Mm-hmm. Like, these logistics are dumb and annoying, but we're going to ignore it because that's what this show does. Like, you're not wrong, Aaron, but like, it's kind of like we're watching Adam West Batman and someone says, man, every single time they throw a punch, there's this big cartoon pow or kablooey. Like, I'd really like to see them land the punch every once in a while. It's like, well,
yeah,
watching the wrong show, because this show doesn't give a fuck about that. They like their pows and kablammies. So, you're right. This is file this under, like, don't put your heroes in a situation where you are not prepared to logically follow through to conclusions. Mm-hmm. And, like, so many times, like, none of these battles feel like they mean anything because the forces of good or evil have just enough forces to fight the next battle.
Yeah.
They always will. They always will, no matter how many times they've been decimated, no matter how many times they've faced half their losses, no matter how many times their ships have been sank to the sea. Euron can always build 1,000 more. Dany can always whittle a couple ships on fucking Dragonstone, which is known, fabled for its vast forests and reserves of lumber and Keebler Elf shipbuilders that can just go out of work at a moment's notice. Like, it's just pow and kablooey. Kablammy, man. David B., why is John's actual name Aegon? That means that Rhaegar named his first son with Aelia Martell Aegon and then named his child with Lyanna Aegon as well. Two sons named Aegon?
Is this happens.
Like George Foreman?
Yeah. 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 Happens all the time.
I mean,
he's an odd duck.
I do remember last year when, like, the lore fans were trying to come up with ways to kind of explain this, is that the whole idea of Rhaegar is that he's, like, obsessed with this prophecy about the prince that was promised coming from his lineage, like his bloodline, and he wanted to kind of hasten that along by marrying the right person. He thought the dragon had to have three heads, so he was trying to bring about another Aegon type of situation. And at some point, I don't know whether he was going through the motions with that with Aelia, and then he meets Lyanna, and it's like, oh no, this is the actual Song of Ice and Fire. I've been trying to fake it with this person, and now I'm whole hog. But like, you get the idea that maybe he was just doing like version two, like the cleaned up version of this experiment. So,
makes a certain amount of sense, sure.
Yeah, but like, also, like, does the name matter? I don't know. That's still, like, I thought Aegon was not a great creative naming thing for Jon. Like, I've always liked if he was, his name is Aemon, but then again, Rhaegar didn't give a shit about Aemon. Probably that only is a deep, rich meaning because of our connection with Aemon and Jon. So it'd probably be just as silly as naming him Aegon. Tim C. After the Battle of Winterfell, I just do not feel like we got our fill of dragon battles. These battles are such a big part of the books that I feel like there has to be more coming our way. Qyburn was deeply interested in the hand of the White that was cut off into the Dragon Pit in the Season 7 finale. We know he's an unethical maester fascinated by necromancy, and this fact is consistently reiterated in the show. With Gregor Clegane, Qyburn has proven capable of resurrecting things that are either dead or on the edge of death. Old skeletons can be resurrected, which was recently proven into the crypts of Winterfell. Okay, so this is just a refurbished. He's going to do something freaky with the skeletons in the dungeon of King's Landing. He also, like, you know, he continues, Tim does, saying that, like, this is, explains, like, the animatic of this, the big dragon skull being menaced by the crossbow. There's, like, a couple of promotional marketing that shows the Iron Throne kind of made out of a dragon. Have you seen that stuff?
Hmm.
Like, it's like a dragon's face, but his horns are kind of turned, like, it's like a blending of an Iron Throne and a dragon. He's like, they're trying to tell us that this is, like, they're bringing back, Beleriand the Black Dread.
I would think it'd be easier to bring back Rhaegal.
Huh?
Like, I've already painted a scenario in which Rhaegal comes back.
What if Rhaegal just washes up on the shore?
Sure.
That's like, so I kept on thinking, like, well, there's no way he'd dredge, but, like, if Rhaegal was a large creature that died in, like, that shallow of a water close to shore, it's entirely possible he would wash up and quickly.
Well, I think it's tough for me to see for a way that the Hound gets into King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in full-on siege mode,
mm-hmm.
To fight Gregor.
Mm-hmm.
So what if Gregor, you know, going on with my theory here, that he could just sort of walk in and pull Rhaegal out?
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure this is silly.
Right.
But let's go with it.
You know.
Yeah. No sillier than anything else they've done.
Sure.
Goes to the bottom of the bay, pulls out Rhaegal
mm-hmm.
by the chains that he's attached to him. And when he comes out of the water, pulling Rhaegal, there's the Hound outside the walls.
Oh.
Waiting for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he draws a sword and they go into some kind of battle. I don't know what you'd call it, but, you know, they fight each other.
Is the mountain, like, completely unescorted? Like, he just, like, Cersei said, hey, take this mile-long chain, go find the dragon.
Yeah, so he does that, but there are people waiting to, like, for the handoff of the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So he sees the Hound and he pulls a sword and he walks up, you know, as they're preparing to fight. And
uh-huh.
in the background, people are taking Rhaegal inside the gates. I think that could go over pretty well.
I like the idea of the it would tickle me to death, the image of Gregor taking his chain and wading out into the water. And, like, every 10 minutes in the episode, we cut to him, like, just walking along the seabed, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it's like the tension. And then he's hooking the chain around Rhaegal's neck. Like, okay.
That it's would so be, stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be fun, though.
It would be.
Okay. Matthew E. Is Bran Dunn contributing to the show? Was his only destiny to not literally duke it out with the Night King? It's known that he can see things in real time, such as the wall falling, Jaime coming to Winterfell, but he couldn't warn the enemy marching south of the immediate threat of the Iron Fleet waiting to ambush them at Dragonstone? Is the sole purpose of the Three-Eyed Raven to be an apolitical source of knowledge, even if it results in the death of Jon and all involved?
No, I don't think so, because he connected up with Sam and essentially, you know, connected the dots on Jon being the true heir, whatever that means.
Bran's purpose was to push Dany into Mad Queen territory.
It seems like it, yeah.
With his political secrets.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that's one of the many things that would make me feel a lot better about this season, is if Bran did something relevant in these next two episodes. Because otherwise, holy shit, the amount of screen time we've seen this kid go up there and make it to the Three-Eyed Raven, get trained by the Three-Eyed Raven, and survive narrowly back so that he can serve as bait to his eternal, you know, tormentor / villain, it doesn't feel like a good payoff to me. And I think, I'm hoping, if I hadn't declared bankruptcy, I'm hoping that they figure out some way to make him relevant. But I don't know. Claudia, just listened to your last two episodes discussing the recent episode Last of the Starks, and you guys haven't talked about the Lord of Light much. Do you think that he will do something else? Is his objective over since the living won the long battle of the night, or the battle of the long night? It just made me wonder, after reviewing the episode, Sir Davos mentions him when he's talking to Tyrion.
Yeah, no, I think the Lord of the Light storyline largely died with the followers of the Lord
Melisandre.
Of the Light. Yeah.
Right.
And Beric, and I don't see any more importance there.
It's weird that she went to Volantis. Like, she went off continent to do something and then came back.
Mm-hmm.
I another shocker is that we haven't seen any more red, because it does seem like that, like, this, if that's true what you say, it does feel like the Lord of the Light fought a bit of a pyrrhic victory himself. Like, your extinction as a god, but you did save humanity, so Way to take it on the mythological chin there.
No, I don't think the Lord of the Light, if it's a real thing, is dead.
Yeah.
I just think it's the storyline, the part of Game of Thrones that cares about the Lord of the Light is done.
Well, I mean, I think that that would make sense because honestly, and there's still two episodes, maybe, like, that's the other thing. It's like there is an outside chance that they will ass pull something that's just fucking amazing that ties all these prophecies and reframes them to be about Cersei.
I thought you declared fan bankruptcy.
Ah, damn it. It's these fucking subprime loans. They just seem so attractive. They're leveraged and packaged, and they got AAA ratings.
I see you reinvesting here.
Their streets are full of gold out there, Jim. Why can't I go out and pick it up?
No, I mean, yeah, fan bankruptcy aside, there is the possibility that they will, and it'd be tricky to, like, reframe all these prophecies, because that's the thing, like, otherwise, I mean, it's definitely on brand for the prophecies to not mean anything, but, like, you know, it would be, I think it'd actually kind of redeem it if, completely redeem it, if they were able to have a satisfying way to reframe the prophecy about Danny, or... Another easy way to go about this would be like John's the prince that was promised to save not just the world from the White Walkers, but also the world from the tyranny of Dany.
Okay.
Like
if she becomes a tyrant to destroy the tyrants.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's part of like, you know, the prophecy all working out. And I don't know if they could like it's man. It seems like they're so close to having a dragon of three heads. If Bran, yeah, I don't know. Fan bankruptcy. Hashtag declare fan bankruptcy. Brian M. I was wondering a few episodes back, what are the ramifications if Yara kills Euron? The Ironborn seemed to follow the strongest leader, so she would automatically get control of Euron's 1,000-ship navy. This seems to be what they've implied on screen, but I'm not sure if I'm reading too much into Theon's scene in the beach.
Has she been drowned and come back yet?
I mean, I think she's like
it's kind of a crucial part. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, there's like two stages of that, like in Ironborn culture as like, there's like the priests that legitimately are drowned and brought back through some kind of CPR. And then there's the half-assed version that Theon got, like where he just gets sprinkled with water. So Yara's gotten that done for sure. I think that like, I mean, the obvious answer is that the from my understanding of the Ironborn culture, they follow the tough fighting leader. So yeah. If Yara is able to defeat Euron and depose him, then she would probably, well, one or two things would happen. They just all throw in support with her, or they would do another king's moot. And then who would, you know, at this stage of the war, like who would win, you know,
who would even challenge her?
Yeah. So Amber S, in the books, Maester Aemon talks about how dragon sex is fluid and changing. This is seen in certain frogs and other asexual creatures, also in dinosaurs and Jurassic Park, also in human beings. What if dragons had laid eggs and they had hatched and come to avenge their brother? There could be some on Dragonstone, but they wouldn't be too large yet. But if some hatched a marine, they might be big enough to wreak havoc by this point. With one dragon left, it'd be great to see them continued on in some way. So I saw some fan art on one of the subreddits, and the title was... We were robbed of the epic ending we deserve. And the picture was depicting the ice dragon, Viserion, breathing fire at Drogon, and their fire was meeting in the middle and canceling each other's out. And they were surrounded by all the things. It was like this big kind of like gothic, you know,
this is so fucking Dragon Ball Z. Like this is so done to death.
Right. Like, if you turn the average frustrated nerd hand in the keyboard, I promise you it'll be 1,000 times worse than what the double D's. And I'm not saying that your egg theory is in that category. I just think like, what would that look like? Like if a bunch of like two or three dragons come over the horizon during an impactful battle, or it would be like, you know, someone would have to be like, look. It's the dragons we didn't know anything about. The, you know, Rhaegal and Drogon must have gotten busy at Essos or something. Like, I don't know how that is introduced.
Dario's riding one in.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I think, like, look, if you're going to do something like that in a show, I almost think you have to foreshadow it somehow.
Right.
And they just haven't foreshadowed that there's even a single other dragon out there.
And dragons being kind of amorphous, asexual, like, you know, life finds a way to kind of be like, I don't think that's enough foreshadowing.
No. I mean, So I'm struggling to even think of any dragon eggs that we know about.
Not since Danny's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't... I don't know. There's so many, like, this would have to happen, and this would have to be true, and that would have to be true, that it would just be a huge stretch if I saw even another single dragon anywhere. Other than maybe, like, an undead Rhaegal or something like that. Or even, like, potentially the return of Assyrian. Like, there's places you could go that have dragons, but... just some random dragons coming from nowhere.
With two episodes left. Far-fetched. Like a season left, maybe you could...
yeah, you could get there, but...
yeah, like when Danny and John find out, like, you know, like the perfect time to do this is when they're inspecting their nests and Danny finds out they're not eating and it turns out it's because they've clutched up eggs and that's something dragons do and no one knew because dragons have been dead for so long. Like, it's just... I think it's too late. It's going to feel
But I think people are theorizing on these sorts of things precisely because the show has been accelerating the way they tell the story. You know, like if you can have in the span of a 2-minute scene Danny going from Winterfell to Dragonstone to King's Landing, then what couldn't you do, you know?
Those are
weeks long journeys that they're undertaking, and they're happening in over seconds of screen time. So I think they're sort of encouraging people to think this way.
No, you're not wrong, because, like, I was just thinking that through, and it's like, yeah, like, I'm against that because, like, to me, I see those as mistakes or things that take me out of it, and I want to see less of those. But, like, there's another way to be like, fuck yeah, if we're gonna put the pedal to the metal.
Right.
Like, get cranked up in here. Get John Wick up and roll with the rule of cool. But then that pisses off a lot of the fans that like the diplomatic
that's me. You
know, power struggle stuff, so... Mm-hmm. Papa Cats. The show made it clear early in season 2 that magic was returning to the world via the birth of Dany's dragons. Now that she's blown a 3-dragon lead and is down to only Drogon, shouldn't magic be dwindling from the world? I love that.
Brand's getting weaker.
It's the bottom of the 8th season. Dany has blown a 3-dragon lead. As she stares down Cersei, glaring from the pitcher's mound. She blew a 3-dragon lead, Jim.
She sure did, yeah.
So shouldn't magic be dwindling from the world? Do you think that's something the show will address, or is it just a forgotten plot point given the rush to the finish?
This should be like a Back to the Future thing. Every dragon that Danny loses, Bran starts to disappear a little or gets weaker.
It would be
His memories start to disappear.
It would be, well, yeah, I mean, especially if Bran dies and the whole world becomes a Polaroid that Marty McFly is constantly looking at in horror and amazement. I think it would be cool if the pyromancers were involved in some kind of plot, like Cersei's like, you cook up these pots, boys. And because, like, just like they're saying, like, oh, our pyromancy is a lot more effective now. We're making more and more because of drag. It'd be funny, like, they're like, we just can't. Like, it's not working anymore. Like, it would be like Cersei winnowing down Dany's dragons would also be diminishing her power. And I guess that would be kind of poetic. Like, if the dragon dies and her wildfire no longer works and it's just a straight-up military fight now, that would be kind of interesting.
Could be.
Don't think it's going to happen.
No.
But it would be an interesting wrinkle. Ginny F. When searching back at previous seasons, I came across Varys and Kinvara scene where Tyrion had called for the priests and priestesses of the Lord of Light to assist in bringing people of Meereen into the fold. Kinvara then brings up what he heard in the flames... what Varys heard in the flames and the name of the one that spoke. This information visibly shakes Varys. Before leaving, she tells Varys that if he's truly Dany's friend, he has nothing to fear from her. Well, given Varys has officially decided to betray Dany, how sweet would it be to have the Red God and his followers getting into the mix in the last war?
I did forget about that scene.
Right. So, like, I mean, that's foreshadowing for Dany, like, killing Varys, but, like, I don't see how it follows that they would get into the mix here, because, I mean, I guess they could. It would be, I guess, you could, like, all this show needs to do is show a bunch of ships that have, like, fucking fiery red hand on their sails, and, because that's what all ships look like, and... landing on there and a bunch of screaming, you know, fiery hand the fanatics get out and a bunch of priests, like we've talked about, just like everything we said about the Battle of Winterfell, bring it forward into the Battle of King's Landing and it works, sort of. But now, like, Melisandre's not there, so it'd just be like, I don't know. How do you do that? like after like, you know, the everything's said and done and Danny and John are covered in ash and smoke from all the fire and they're like dusting themselves off and Keen Vara comes up smugly and they're like, ah, thanks for saving the bacon. And they're all like, hey, you know, Melisandre called us in and we'll do anything for Melisandre. And then a sweet guitar lick plays and the dragon Drogon just explodes in the background for some reason.
Love it.
Emily M. Tyrion knew exactly what he was doing when he was trying to persuade Cersei. He does know his sister, and he would have known that Euron believes her child is his. I don't know how he would know that latter part. Hmm. I'm also speculating that someone sent a raven to King's Landing so Dany would be ambushed, because how did Cersei know that Dany was coming? Sure, Cersei's anticipating, but does she have a calendar or has a previous notion of specifically when Dany would come? Euron and his fleet were already well in the water before Dany arrived. They weren't gathering their troops and boarding ships in those scenes. They were armed and prepared. They were ready, so ready that they even knew which direction Dany was sailing. Okay, I want us to take a step back here. This is just naval combat 101. If you know, like, Dany has to come from the north. That's mm-hmm. the only, like, unless she comes way out and comes from the rear, which, fine with the dragon, but how would she do it with her ships? Like, they have to sail from this direction. Like, ships, especially sailing ships, can't go anywhere they want. They don't have motors. They got to sail. So mm-hmm. if you are an Age of Sail captain and you want to blockade a town or someplace, you know and pretty good, you know, like where they're going to be coming from, where they're going to be sailing from. You look at the wind, you look at the tides, this is where you're going to come from. And you can effectively, that's how they used to have battles on the ocean before GPS and shit. Like, there was military strategic objectives they had to be blockade. So, like, I guess I don't have a problem. And like, what else would Euron be doing other than that with his Navy, right?
Yeah, I mean, if his goal is to intercept the incoming fleet, then he really wouldn't need to be like in Blackwater or whatever protecting, because they're not gonna have a fleet to attack from that angle. So
also, these ships routinely spent months at sea, you know, so they've got food and stores to like to do those kind of blockades. So it's like, maybe the impression people would have is that, like, if you had a ship that you'd spend all your time in port until like the alarms went off and it's like a jet fighter in Independence Day, everyone scrambles to them and like takes, and mostly these guys go out and loiter and like deny area of the sea. So I didn't have a problem with that aspect of it. The insane gunnery and the fact that he was tactically cloaked from Danny's aerial observations, my problem with those scenes. But anyway, so her point is that Emily's using this and the fact that like Tyrion might have advanced knowledge of his sister that suggests that they're spying going back both in both directions, that like, you know, someone's feeding Danny intelligence, someone's feeding Cersei intelligence. I mean,
I don't see the channels of communication.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out how that would even happen, let alone who would be doing it.
Because she's taking the even one step further and suggesting that Tyrion and Cersei are conspiring because they've had this plan to like to put the Lannisters on top all along. And that like it'd be one thing for Tyrion to be a traitor in the vein of Varys, but for him to be working with Cersei all along to return the Lannisters to dominance, that seems like a wild swing out of his character.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Chloe B. I'm a bit of a history buff, and I had the following epiphany, and it blew my own mind. I wish you a speedy recovery from that. Blown minds, nothing to take lightly.
It's expensive.
Gurm has been open about his love for history and inspiration he took from Scottish history and the War of the Roses specifically. Mary Tudor was believed to have had a failed or phantom pregnancy. She was aptly named Bloody Mary because she had burned hundreds of Protestants alive during her reign, trying to stomp out the Church of England her father had established and reinstall Catholicism. Her pregnancy was announced, and eventually it just kind of didn't happen. They thought that maybe she got the dates wrong. History keeps the details vague, but eventually she died of what we think was a uterine or ovarian tumor, which would explain her swelling stomach. When she died, her throne was given to her half-sister Elizabeth I, or Good Queen Bess. What if Cersei is the bitter queen that Mary, the bitter Queen Mary, desperate to have a new heir alive? Her failing mental health could result in her developing a false pregnancy with symptoms that could feasibly convince Qyburn, but also be inconsistent with time and development. Jaime had already left her in the book. I could see this as being a botched bullet point on the part of the Double D's not knowing how to portray a false pregnancy. Well, yeah, I buy that. Like, let me stop there. I don't even think that, I don't think Qyburn has to be deceived. Like, if Cersei just says, I want to pull this false pregnancy gambit, he'd just be like, yes, my queen.
Yeah.
And he would do all the significant nodding in the world to Euron and like, oh, yeah, she's totally pregnant, bro. Totally. I'm a maester. Don't argue with me.
Right. It seems like the email, you know, and the attempt to kind of explain this this false pregnancy thing stems from the idea that so much time has passed and she's not showing and Gilly is, and there's a lot of comparisons on the timeline between one woman who claims to be pregnant but definitely doesn't look it and another who looked pregnant and said, I'm pregnant. I just think these are, let's call them oversights, by the writers. I don't think they're trying to plan something more elaborate.
I mean, I do sit up straight a little bit and take notice when people say it's worth the roses.
Sure, because we know that.
We've heard it
from George's own mouth.
A lot of the blueprints for especially early days of Game of Thrones kind of came, and A Song of Ice and Fire came from that. But she continues her analogy that Sansa could be the traitor's daughter who is younger and a more beautiful queen who's better suited and qualified to rule. Arya's defensive, Sansa is smart and capable. To John, make me think that given the opportunity, she would put her sister on the throne. Elizabeth the First was never married or had children. She ruled independently and did a damn good job. This is a role that I can naturally see Sansa in. She's gained support from actually being fair and a just ruler that inspires loyalty, similar to the rebellions and rumblings that happened around Elizabeth before taking her throne. So, two-part prediction. Cersei's got a failed, a faked pregnancy that's going to result in her being dead and supplanted by Sansa sitting on the Iron Throne.
Huh.
Do you?
I'm not buying into the first part, and therefore I sort of can't buy into the second part because it depends on the
Let me run this by. If we put aside the democratic theories about how Game of Thrones is going to end, and we just have there's going to be a showdown between Danny and John. Presumably, John wins because the only way you have a bittersweet ending is for the hero to win. I don't think John wants to be the king.
No, I don't think so.
It would be interesting if he just abdicates his throne in favor of Sansa. I don't know how they make that happen, because there is no fucking claim there. It goes against almost all the cultural mores the people have already a queen. They have an evil queen, so they'd be primed to accept a good queen. But how, if you're going to pay any attention to kind of secession or... I don't know. If Sansa does a Queen Elizabeth and says, I'm just not going to have children and I'm going to be a one and done.
How about John takes the throne?
Okay.
He marries Sansa and then he abdicates the throne.
Aren't they cousins? Aren't they? They're cousins now.
Yeah.
I guess that's less. So if I get my genetic diversity scale out, I think being cousins, marrying cousins is better than marrying aunts and uncles, which is better than marrying brothers and sisters, which is better than marrying parents. I think that's the chain of worst ideas for just from a genetic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I think that would be profoundly gross, though.
Sure,
because they
I'm suggesting it in jest, but yeah.
Okay, especially since
I was just trying to think how could it work, and right. I guess that would make Sansa queen, right?
Yeah, among other things. I think it'd be funny just it's smash cut from her and Arya both being but yeah, I don't care what the truth is. We've always seen you as our brother, dude. To them getting married two episodes later. Yeah, that'd be a hairpin turn to negotiate. All right, this is the last email, Justin N. As an avid listener to your podcast, show watcher, book reader, and overall super fan, the question of when is George going to finish these books has obviously come up endlessly. My question is, why hasn't anyone considered that George hasn't been telling the entire truth and has a closet deal with HBO not to release the last two books before the show ends? Think about it. Viewer HBO, and I know this is an annual season tradition to talk about what if there's a secret deal. If you were HBO and you were in a precipice of the biggest series finale in television history, wouldn't you do everything in your power to make sure that no one in the book world would have the slightest idea of how this thing ends? We've been waiting on the Winds of Winter since the show premiered, so it seems likely that HBO quickly caught on to how big the show could potentially become and wanted to make sure nothing else could be spoiled for show watchers. Okay. I don't know how mechanically this could ever work, because... there as person has dibs on George's rights, and it's his publisher. Presumably, I don't remember if it's Random House or it's Penguin or who it is, but it's a multi-million dollar international company that is maybe not as powerful as HBO, but certainly enough to like make stink in the press if George is going to be like, yeah, we're not going to give you any books for like 10 years because I got this deal with HBO going on. Like, I just don't see it. Also,
maybe they make the deal with the publisher.
If I was HBO, so if HBO, like, so, like, because yeah. Here's the thing.
It's like Sony doing a PS4 exclusive, right? Like,
but what's more,
give you money to not put this thing on another console. Hmm.
I could see that for Dream of Spring, maybe, but Winds of Winter, like, how does that do anything but just whip up the fans even more? Like, get people even more excited? Unless Winds of Winter is bad? Like, there's a dark interpretation that, like, let's say that Martin has Winds of Winter and HBO reads it and is like, we don't like how this is going. Let us tell this story first. And I just, yeah.
The whole fucking thing is a mess. My brain wants to, you know, jump to, oh, here's how this could happen or here's how this could happen. And we just don't have any good indication
in secret, too. Like, so many people would know this would happen and nobody would ever leak it. And
yeah, I don't know, man. Like, all of this is a mystery to me. It's such a colossal clusterfuck at this point.
Right.
That I just look at it and I throw my hands up even trying to decipher who's to blame.
Yeah.
What kind of deals have been made? What kind of deals have been broken?
If this actually came out later that this was something like this was true, is there a bigger like non-sex and murder scandal in Hollywood history?
No.
That like the HBO secretly buried Martin's books and the publisher was complicit and we've waited 10 years it's not been 10 because we just got Dance like season 2 of Game of Thrones, but like a better part of a decade for essentially just monetary reasons.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think that there's just no way anything is like this happening in secret. So,
but you would also think that the Martin's publisher would be putting up a stink to get these fucking books out while it's as relevant as it's ever going to be. Like, you, George, you got to get these books out while Game of Thrones is on the air because you're never going to be more popular than you are right now.
Yeah.
You will never make more money on these books than right now.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't the publisher out there, you know, saying that?
I mean, like, I could weave a conspiracy theory. So Martin says, oh, HBO wants me to do this. And the publisher says, no, fuck you. And Martin's like, okay, here's the thing. If the show's great, then people are going to want to see the expanded version. The show's terrible. People are going to pin all their hopes on me making it great. And in the meantime, I'll release 2 Bible-sized tomes and The World of Ice and Fire and a cookbook and some anthology short stories and some Dunkin' Egg shit. And we'll be making tons of money in the meantime and we don't hurt ourselves. Like, I can see a conspiracy theory where this all makes this, like, straight up, like, greedy businessman sense. But, like, I just can't imagine, like, there's just too many.
I can't imagine if there wasn't a deal like that, there wouldn't already be a lawsuit telling,
that's what,
like,
I'm saying,
on George Martin saying you didn't finish these fucking books,
right?
And now you're being sued by your publisher.
George Martin's not Tywin Lannister. He's not so powerful that he can just make these things happen and crush all dissent, you know?
Right.
So unless he had the publisher in on it, but then how does it not leak? I just think this is a little. This is sweet summer child thinking, because what people want is the books to be really good and the books to be done and the books to come out 3 months from now and 6 months from now, and then we can get the story that we knew was going to be possible the whole time, and we can, you know, be smug about the double D's fucking it up, and, you know. But the other hand is like, oh man, if that's the true, the other thing, consider that's your conspiracy theory, wouldn't the double D's have access to the material? So, like, we've been saying that, like, so, like, and therefore, wouldn't these final seasons look a lot more like what Martin's actually writing?
Or if he had these books done?
Yeah, like, there's a product conspiracy that he can't even let the double D's, like HBO wants him to sit on
the
books,
yeah,
but also not share it with us so we can just bumblefuck our way telling this story and shooting in the dark.
Yeah, this is why I throw my hands up, because nothing that you hypothesize makes sense.
Yeah.
None of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mad world. All right, that's it. That's Game of Thrones spoiler edition. We are going to our watch is not over. literally, we got two more weeks of Game of Thrones, the penultimate episode, which promises to be, if nothing else, tons of spectacle, and then the finale. It's going to be... it's going to be interesting, like, if they save this, if it just kind of limps to the finish, if it turns out to be a debacle, like, it will be a memorable experience for us all, I'm sure, and we're going to be along for the ride all the way up or all the way down. On Sunday night or right after Eastern time zone airing, we got the instant talk for everybody. If you're a club member, club.baldmove.com, you can join us for the instant talk and, you know, just real time talk it over with us. Tuesday, we got the full podcast and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We will see you on one of those occasions. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.